city, flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me.
Hello everybody, Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, here with you again on the 20th of October, 2013. I'm chuckling because every time we do another week, I'm going, wow, we got this, what, okay, this far. You know, I getting ready for this show was like, there have been so many heavy, portentous, profound, amazing developments this week, some of which are truly heartbreaking, heart-moving, and inspiring, but there are signs like the old silent movies, the damsel on the railroad tracks before the rain. We don't know where Dudley Do writes up in New Brunswick beating on Native Americans, but you get the point that we can all see and feel and sense that it's a vice closing, that they're really big things. We're going to talk about some of that stuff. It's really heavy, but it's really heart moving and inspiring tonight, and there are a couple of good signs, but my brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and nephews and nieces, I'm telling you, man, this is down to it. All right, so I had talked in the last show last week about the new normal. So let's just get the new normal shit out of the way. 13 trail cars carrying LPG derailed and exploded in Alberta outside of Edmonton. God, I've lectured at the University of Alberta, Edmonton, and Calgary, too. That's the new normal. There's a major out-of-season, actually two major out-of-season brush fires in southern Australia, South Wales and Queensland, I believe, around Sydney, that look to be joining into one huge brush fire. This is their early spring down there, and it's not supposed to be either this hot, this dry, or there's so many fires. Great Australian comment, but easier to cook popcorn now. Just have to go outside and never mind. There are massive violent riots, and I mean big ones. There's an RT video up on the site. The riots in Rome over austerity, poverty, everything going to shit. That's the new normal. That's going on tonight. Now let's get down to the stuff that's more telling. That's all stuff that we just accept now these days as background noise in our lives, of course, until they happen to us. Before we get deeper into the show, I want to read a notice that was put up on the Facebook page of Last Real Indians. You can enter that on Facebook and get led there. It's one of the outlets, one of the channels through which we have been receiving messages from New Brunswick and the amazing events that have been that are still unresolved up there and still underway. But there was a very strong and I don't want to say alarmist because that implies not true, but part of me believes that a lot of it was true and needed. Post saying that the armored personnel carriers and Stephen Harper had said we're going to go kill all those Indians, something to that effect. I mean, I have never seen such egregious statements as I've seen coming out of the Mounties and the Canadian government. We'll talk more about New Brunswick later, but this statement says a lot, and it was posted by the elders, I believe, of the Osipatog or the Mi'kmaq people up there, and they wrote, "Relatives, we have been asked by people inside the Osipatog blockade to alleviate the panic that was caused by the last update from the LRI, that's the last remaining Indian page. We apologize for the rise in concern and the panic from such an idea that the PM would, quote, crush the indigenous issue at all costs. We have several admins, and one admin perceived he had inside intel to justify such statement and reacted in real time to warn. If it surfaces, we'll post it, but until then, we sincerely apologize and never would intend an undue panic on the part of the people holding the front line at Pound Osipatog. Chief Aaron Sock of the Osipatog First Nation has asked for a cooling down period so that we can smudge, clear our thoughts, ask for guidance, and rebuild in a peaceful manner after yesterday's attacks on the peaceful camp. Again, we apologize for raising alarm, but we will remain vigilant, not only a Osipatog situation, but actions to come. We'll take down the post." Hoorah! That is so honorable. That's so correct. Throughout the course of my career, I have always stepped up to do that. When I made a mistake, you step up right away, and that's how you maintain honor and credibility, and I salute. I took a lot of strength from seeing that message, because that means that the words of the elders and those that post at LRI can be trusted. Can anyone possibly imagine Alex Jones ever doing anything like that? That's why honor is so important. Honor is a currency. And we will get back to the New Brunswick situation, but I wanted to get that out. All right, so now I'm going to read something, because never in as long as I have been on Facebook has something been posted 9 times the same story. And it is, I'm just going to read it to you because it is so powerful, and it will tune us to where we're going with the show tonight, which is going to be, there's going to be travel a lot in heart space tonight. But this is a story by a writer named Greg Ray, who I would love to shake hands with someday. It's called The Ocean is Broken. It was published on the site of the Newcastle Herald. That's from Australia, on October the 18th. And that's the title, The Ocean is Broken. It was the silence that made this voyage different from all of those before it, not the absence of sound exactly. The wind still whipped the sails and whistled in the rigging. The waves still sloshed against the fiberglass hull. And there were plenty of other noises, muffled thuds and bumps and scrapes as the boat knocked against pieces of debris. What was missing was the cries of the seabirds, which on all previous similar voyages had surrounded the boat. The birds were missing because the fish were missing. Exactly 10 years before, when Newcastle yachtsman Ivan McFagin had sailed exactly the same course from Melbourne to Osaka, all he'd had to do to catch a fish from the ocean between Brisbane and Japan was throw out a baited line. Quote, there was not one of the 28 days on that portion of the trip when we didn't catch a good-sized fish to cook up and eat with some rice, McFagin recalled. But this time, on that whole long leg of sea journey, the total catch was 2. No fish, no birds, hardly a sign of life at all. In the years gone by, I'd gotten used to all the birds and their noises, he said. They'd be following the boat sometimes, resting on the mast before taking off again. You'd see flocks of them wheeling over the surface of the sea in the distance, feeding on pilchards. But in March and April of this year, only silence and desolation surrounded his boat, funnel web, as it sped across the surface of a haunted ocean. North of the equator, up above New Guinea, the ocean racers saw a big fishing boat working a reef in the distance. Quote, all day it was there, trawling back and forth. It was a big ship, like a mother ship, he said. And all night it worked, too, under bright floodlights, and in the morning McFagin was awoken by his crewman calling out urgently that the ship had launched a speedboat. Obviously, I was worried. We were unarmed, and pirates are a real worry in those waters, I thought. If these guys had weapons, we were in deep trouble. But they weren't pirates, not in the conventional sense, at least. The speedboat came alongside, and the Melanesian men aboard offered gifts of fruit and jars of jam and preserves. And they gave us 2 big sugar bags full of fish, he said. They were good, big fish of all kinds. Some were fresh, but others had obviously been in the sun for a while. We told them there was no way we could possibly use all those fish. There were just 2 of us with no real place to store or keep them. They just shrugged and told us to tip them overboard. That's what they would have done with them anyway, they said. They told us that this was just a small fraction of one day's catch, that they were only interested in tuna, and to them everything else was rubbish. It was all killed, all dumped. They just trawled that reef day and night, stripped it of every living thing. And Fagin felt sick to his heart. That was one fishing boat among countless more working unseen beyond the horizon, many of them doing exactly the same thing. No wonder the sea was dead. No wonder his baited lines caught nothing. There was nothing to catch. If that sounds depressing, it only got worse. The next leg of the long voyage was from Osaka to San Francisco, and for most of that trip, the desolation was tinged with a nauseous horror and a degree of fear. After we left Japan, he said, it felt as if the ocean itself was dead. We hardly saw any living things. We saw one whale, sort of rolling helplessly on the surface with what looked like a big tumor on its head. It was pretty sickening. I've done a lot of miles on the ocean in my life, and I'm used to seeing turtles, dolphins, sharks, and big flurries of feeding birds. But this time, for 3,000 nautical miles, there was nothing alive to be seen. In place of the missing life was garbage in astounding volumes. Quote, part of it was the aftermath of the tsunami that hit Japan a couple of years ago. The wave came over the land, picked up an unbelievable load of stuff, carried it out to sea, and it's all still out there, everywhere you look. Ivan's brother Glenn, who boarded at Hawaii for the run to the U.S., marveled at the thousands and thousands of yellow plastic buoys, the huge tangles of synthetic rope, fishing lines and nets, pieces of polystyrene foam by the million, and slicks of oil and petrol everywhere. Countless hundreds of wooden power poles are out there, snapped off by the killer wave and still trailing their wires in the middle of the sea. Quote, in years gone by, when you were becalmed by lack of wind, you'd just start your engine and motor on, Ivan said. Not this time. In a lot of places, we couldn't start our motor for fear of entangling the propeller in the mass of pieces of rope and cable. That's an unheard-of situation out in the ocean. If we decide to motor, we couldn't do it at night, only in the daytime with a lookout on the bow watching for rubbish. On the bow, in waters above Hawaii, you could see right down into the depths. I could see that the debris isn't just on the surface, it's all the way down, and it's all sizes from a soft drink bottle to pieces the size of a big car or truck. We saw a factory chimney sticking out of the water with some kind of boiler thing still attached below the surface. We saw a big container-type thing just rolling over and over in the waves. We were weaving around these pieces of debris. It was like sailing through a garbage dump tip. Below decks, you were constantly hearing things hitting against the hull, and you were constantly afraid of hitting something really big. As it was, the hull was scratched and dented all over the place from bits and pieces we never saw. Plastic was ubiquitous, bottles, bags, and every kind of throwaway domestic item you can imagine, from broken chairs to dustpans, toys, and utensils, and something else. The boat's vivid yellow paint job, never faded by sun or sea in years gone past, reacted with something in the water off Japan, losing its sheen in a strange and unprecedented way. Back in Newcastle, Ivan McFadyen is still coming to terms with the shock and horror of the voyage. The ocean is broken, he said, shaking his head in stunned disbelief. Recognizing the problem is vast and that no organizations or government appear to have a particular interest in doing anything about it, McFadyen is looking for ideas. He plans to lobby government ministers, hoping they might help. More immediately, he will approach the organizers of Australia's major ocean races, trying to enlist yachties into the international scheme that uses volunteer yachtsmen to monitor debris and marine life. McFadyen signed up to the scheme while he was in the U.S., responding to an approach by U.S. academics who asked yachties to fill in daily survey forms and collect samples for radiation testing, a significant concern in the wake of the tsunami and consequent nuclear power station failure in Japan. I asked them, why don't we push for a fleet and go clean up the mess, he said. But they said they'd calculated that the environmental damage from burning the fuel to do that job would be worse than just leaving the debris there. This one has truly gone viral like nothing I have ever seen on Facebook. It's up on my Facebook page, Michael C. Rupert, now. Until you change the way money works, you change nothing. The price of tuna and food, money, the power that's behind the money when people are now beginning to realize that starvation is at hand. Of course, the tuna are mostly radioactive now anyway. Speaks everything that they considered all the other life they had taken, including probably the death of the coral reef itself and all the other living things, to be just trash. And isn't that the world we're living in? And when you sail across an ocean filled with trash, you see the logic of the infinite growth paradigm. Now, I have to say that, like in this last week, last few weeks, I have been absolutely stunned by the three of the most evil men I have ever seen in my life, David Cameron, Stephen Harper, and Tony Abbott. I watched a clip from British TV that was just bluntly clear. The Prime Minister's office had said it absolutely prefers the economy over the environment. There's no question he is pursuing fracking at all costs in England. Stephen Harper, we see what the Canadian government is doing, breaking treaties and all words and all vows, moving to frack with all possible speed everywhere. And that's a very telling thing because it's happening all over the world, even as victories are being won against fracking. And the absolute fascist buffoon Tony Abbott, who moved to start destroying the Great Barrier Reef less than 24 hours after taking office in Australia. Well, okay, so the anybody from the Commonwealth, is like, but that's what the neocons, that's what the scions and proteges of infinite growth have done by stealing governments all over the world, who really just don't give a shit now about what they do, and they are being openly brazen and ruthless about pursuing energy at all costs. Such is the desperation. And just before the show tonight, the Associated Press released a story out of Long Beach, California. California is going to be in the show a lot tonight. California is in for some big, big shit. Long Beach, California, AP. The oil production technique known as fracking is more widespread and frequently used in the offshore platforms and man-made islands near some of California's most populous and famous coastal communities than state officials believed. In waters off Long Beach, Seal Beach, and Huntington Beach, this is my home stomping grounds, guys, some of the region's most popular surfing strands and tourist attractions, oil companies have used fracking at least 203 times at six sites in the past two decades, according to interviews and drilling records obtained by the AP through a public records request. I was going to do this later, but I might as well do it now. We had some great revelations about fracking during the course of the week as our indigenous relatives, the Osipikdog and Miqua in New Brunswick, might have triggered the Lexington and Concord of a human revolution. I'm going to scroll down to this. Will Small, I'm looking for it, posted, and this was actually from an RT article several months ago. But what it was revealed, here we go. Looking up into the strata of which they pump the pressurized processed water to fracture, thus create a huge surface area sponge. Fracturing means fracturing. In the interest of time, I'll cut to this. U.S. Patent number 4441428 was filed by one Thomas Wilson, and I believe Halliburton was a part of that. Revealing that it is a novel way to fracture oil, which is means, and it shows, it's right in there, that they're shooting depleted uranium after they drill down to the strata of shale. They're shooting Mother Earth with depleted uranium because it's such a great projectile to break through rocks. Thank Dick Cheney for that, man. If you've heard of evil, we will come back to other incidents of evil tonight. But the point that I'm getting there is that if the apocalypse mean the revelation and the standing in the naked sunlight to show the real essence of what everything is, man, the evil guys are just strutting around absolutely bare naked, and they don't care. They may have erections. While they're destroying all this stuff. I don't know. But now we get to some of the stuff. Well, let's play a song first, and then we'll come back to that before the break. We mentioned that, I guess this is getting quite a bit of attention, as it should. There are three high school teachers at Malibu High that have turned up with thyroid cancer, and three more with other symptoms, a case of bladder cancer. And I think it was 14, 15 students are having severe migraines, all symptoms of radiation poisoning. The locals are trying to blame it on PCBs, but apparently not many people are believing that the lights may be going on. One other thing I'll add before I do this song is we have been tracking now three major typhoons have hit Japan, more specifically Tokyo and Fukushima, in the last 4 weeks, and there is a super typhoon. And when I say super, I mean it's humongous. It's a Cat 4 right now. It will weaken. But it's Typhoon Francisco, which was moving in a westerly direction from Guam, but appears to be making a 90-degree right turn to take it on a track for another collision with Fukushima and Tokyo. And in case you didn't notice, we posted on Facebook this week, it was posted that when Typhoon Wipha just went through, it was slow, and it was only a Cat 1. Everybody goes, no big deal, but it was huge. It dropped 33 inches of rain on Fukushima in 24 hours. And I thought Boulder was bad. Well, Francisco is bigger. And there is another tropical low forming behind it that is reminiscent of the movie The Perfect Storm, although I'm not going to speculate, maybe that low might weaken Francisco because we all want to pray. I don't think that Fukushima can stand another major typhoon, but the question is how many. Mother Earth is screaming to us. These storms are pointing right at Japan. The message is right there. And Fukushima is deteriorating so rapidly, it's almost impossible to keep track of it. At one well storage site, radiation went up 6,000 times what it was a week ago. More leaks, more deterioration in the workforce, soil still deteriorating, all those hundreds of tons of water per day still flowing under soil that is turning to mud and liquefying, and there is another typhoon on the way. Francisco is like, you just put your jaw down and just watch. That's all you can do. I mean, that's there are forces more powerful than the human mind. And I'm grateful for the fact that people start saying, is this HAARP? And I go, what's the motive? No, this is Mother Earth. She has the motive to tell us. She is speaking to us as the trees and the 100,000 head of cattle that just froze to death due to abrupt, unexpected weather in South Dakota. The animals are speaking to us. The trees are speaking to us. And in California, a dead saber-toothed whale is rolled up on the beach in Venice, California, as well as two oarfish. And we'll talk about those after the break. Which brings us to the first song that I wanted to play tonight. You know, it's one that I wrote with Doug Lewis at New White Trash, because it's very appropriate. And it fits. And now stay in your heart space and feel, if you will, accept the fact that this is overwhelming. It can't be denied anymore. It's getting to be overwhelming. I should mention, by the way, that there is a good video on my Facebook page to stop a major natural gas pipeline, a fracking gas pipeline, going into New York City through New Jersey, which is going to be carrying radon gas and all a lot of really nasty chemicals, and there's an uprising there. You know, the powers that be need energy. They don't care what they'll do for it. Now they don't care who they're going to kill, because without energy they can't rape the planet, they can't make money, they can't make profits. So from New White Trash, here's me singing a song called Weird Kind of Sense.
Oh, what a mess we left you. Against the odds and other gods, we left you such a mess.
Posting on tea and champagne, nothing left but a dry disdain. Camped by the fire in formula time, under the change of a changing world of vain.
What a mess we left you. What a mess we left you.
This is not tomorrow. Today is not a drill. Today is not a drill.
Makes a weird kind of sense.
Yesterday needs no warning, and the prophecy's fulfilled.
What a mess we left you.
Makes a weird kind of sense.
What a mess we left you.
See the stream become
a what a mess we left you.
More and more intent.
What a mess we left you.
Tearing down. That God in heaven said,
what a mess we left you.
It's a weird kind of sin.
What a mess we left you.
It's a weird kind of sin.
What a
Kind of sense if you balance everything out. That's from New White Trash, newwhitetrash.com. I wrote that with Doug Lewis, and that was from our first CD, Double Wide. You can listen to the song there, and if you want to see videos connected, you can also go to Venice Arts Club, but that song just seemed to fit. Now, they're all up on break tonight. Going back to the situation in Malibu, this is from the website Optimal Prediction. You can find all of these stories linked directly, anything I source, on my Facebook page. And this is not a story that some, you know, off-the-wall websites are carrying. This is covered by Channel 7 Eyewitness, Eyewitness or Eyewitless News in Los Angeles. It's a big concern. A lot of people are very concerned about it in Malibu, and that's where I came up, man. Venice is just down the road south from Malibu. And quoting, three teachers had been recently diagnosed with stage 1 thyroid cancer. Another 3 had thyroid problems, and 7 suffered migraines. The letter also cited, it was a letter written to the school board, incidents of hair loss, rashes, and bladder cancer. Then the children are turning up with instances of cancer. And so there was a large meeting, and the school had started testing for soil contamination, and cover story of PCBs was put out. Hughes seemed reassured, I'm quoting now, question rained down, would inspectors test for radioactivity? Was there mold? Was the water safe? Several parents cited having children with cancer and other ailments, prompting Lucas, the mother of 2 students, to ask how many suffered migraines. The show of hands seemed to convince many of an epidemic. This is becoming conventional wisdom. I mean, people are, the lights are going on in Malibu. That land of the privilege, that home of the, you know, that's where the movie stars live. Thyroid cancer and other thyroid diseases are caused by radioactive iodine. In fact, iodine-131 is used in thyroid ablation. This is used to destroy all remaining thyroid tissue for people who have had their thyroids completely removed due to thyroid cancer. The purpose of I-131 for thyroid ablation is to destroy all functioning thyroid tissue. Lungano and Sherman have found elevated levels, 2 scientists, of hypothyroidism among infants on the West Coast after the meltdowns. High levels of I-131 in California. Kelp were also detected after Fukushima. Well, as documented here, other sites, I-131 has been emitted from Fukushima since March. So this is hitting. Now, Malibu High School is 1 block from the Pacific Ocean. Then it gets down to some really good discussion of the fact that buckyballs or radiation can bounce off in the sea foam, and it can be transferred up to 10 miles inland. So the radiation that has been dumped into the water, which I'm sure that the corporate powers that be are more happy than the atmosphere, if it stays in the water, once the water hits a beach and starts to get exposed to air, the radiation can lift up out. Now, it's probably going to do something to house values in Malibu, but we, you know, should remember the starfish are turning to goo off the Atlantic coast and the U.S. Pacific coast of Canada. We've had numerous instances of bluefin tuna testing positive for radiation in the seaweed, and the sockeye salmon, humpback whales, abalone, mussels have all been tested positive. I love abalone, used to. The sardine industry off Canada has completely collapsed. Not a single sardine has been caught. Now it's hitting humans, and it's gonna have an effect, and it cannot be, and it will not be much longer before there is the start of a panic about this. It can't be avoided. And Malibu's home to me, man. So then we had two oarfish turn up. The stories were, again, they're all posted on my Facebook page. Oarfish are great, big, long, tubular creatures with great big mouths and jaws and razor-sharp teeth that live at depths of 3,000 feet. They rarely, rarely ever come up to the surface. And one has turned up near San Onofre down in Orange County, California. Another one a little bit further north just rolled up on the beach. They're like 12, 15 feet long. They are creatures from the depth. They are not susceptible to sonar because they don't have the echolocation gear that to be affected by sonar. And then it was posted on my website. I'm sorry, I wish I could forget my friend's name who did it. If you're listening, I'm sorry. I thank you. From the Guardian in 2010, oarfish started turning up dead on Japanese beaches. Now, in ancient Japanese culture, and I mean going back thousands of years, this is whether you better pay or pray that you can understand that Mother Earth is talking to us. Oarfish are historically referred to as harbingers of a major earthquake. And the starfish started turning up off the Japanese coast almost exactly 1 year, or the story was published, 1 year before the Fukushima 9.0 earthquake. And as we put these stories up on my website, right after the Guardian story went up and two oarfish, very rare occurrence, turn up dead on California beaches, a lifelong San Diego fisherman who is a friend posted on my website, oarfish are bad news. Bad, always a bad omen. And sailors and omens, they are, they go together. Now, if you have a rare whale turning up dead, rolling up dead on Venice Beach, I can't imagine that. That was truly home for me, and these two oarfish turning up. And the fact that oarfish, they live down, scientists have, I have a quote here about it somewhere that I'll get to if I can read, but I'm pretty accurate. It's all up on the webpage. We'll do a station break in a second. What I read out of that is Southern California is needs to get ready for not only a major earthquake, but to be prepared for what's coming. I've talked past the bottom of the hour, but we are going to do a station break. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, on the Lifeboat Hour here on PRN.FM. We'll be right back after these messages. Yeah, living the good life. Say a prayer for the new white trash. That was from our first album, Double Wide, newwhitetrash.com. Okay, getting back to the business here. There was a seminal article published this week at globalresearch.ca who have been so, so valuable and useful. And this was a seminal document, assuming that there might at some point in the future be a functioning legal system. But as a piece of research, it was just amazing. I mean, I thought I was shocked by learning that all the fracking companies are shooting depleted uranium into Mother Earth to do the fracking. How much more offensive does it get? Well, here we go. The article was titled Fukushima and the Transnationality of Radioactive Nuclear Contamination. Visualizing, let me click on the link to give you the full title and the author's name because he's worth the credit. Hold on, I had it. Control, click to follow. Okay, well, I'll get it open here in a second. But I got to read you this quote. Legal document. But it is so revealing. It's kind of like the work that I used to do from the wilderness, reading through mountains and mountains of legal document to find that one holy shit quote. And this was a legal case which TEPCO won. TEPCO argued, this is a quote, that as a private contractor, its responsibilities to the public were limited, and that it was no longer the owner of radioactive matter released from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. It claimed the materials were, legal term, res nullius, or in Japanese, I guess it's mushibutsu, thus belonging to no one, like mist or fish, and that it was owned by those upon whose land it fell. What? Let that sink in for a minute. We created all this mess. We're murdering, you know, we in conjunction with GE and the infinite growth monetary paradigm. We did all this, killing. Japan is mortally wounded. Millions of people are going to die from cancer. By the way, the illnesses are becoming more and more apparent, just like Malibu teachers turning up with cancer. You can't hide this stuff anymore. And they argued that, hey, once it was released into the atmosphere, we don't own it. We're not responsible. It's the responsibility of the people who it landed on. This, my friends, my aunts, uncles, my nieces, nephews, my grandfathers and grandmothers, is what the infinite growth paradigm is. This is its essence. And this is what I have been writing for so many years. I saw this clearly. It's all I've been warning about. Certainly since 2002, since 2003, like a one-note samba. Until you change the way money works, you change nothing. Nothing. And this is just pure, abject evil. Just like David Cameron saying, we don't care about the environment. We're going to frack everywhere we can because it'll bring people money. There it is. It's all right out there in front of us, and it is so utterly out of control, and it's getting worse. It's getting worse. That was great work by Global Research. I hope there's some place where that can be used to now just justify a list for the guillotine. EBT card holders, all you guys on food stamps, head up. Zero hedge this week. Food stamp program shut down imminent. Zero hedge, and this may or may not likely be resolved as a result of the pseudo temporary solution. This was from the 15th, because memos have been sent out to the Crossroads Urban Center in Utah. It was a very disturbing warning for the 46 million Americans. I'm quoting Zero Hedge, now currently on food stamps. Understanding the operational issues and constraints that states face, and in the interest of preserving maximum flexibility, we are directing states to hold their November issuance files and delay transmissions to state EBT transfer vendors until further notice. Now, that may or may not go away, but it gives me the opportunity to make a very important point, which is that you must understand out there, get your heads clear, there are no entitlements in the real world to anything except for a chance to defend yourself, except for a chance to try to live your life and stay alive. There are no entitlements. Those are all going to go away. We're seeing a lot of demonstrations around the world on fracking. The UK, Romania has blocked fracking, and I should say parenthetically that Mexico has banned GMO corn. Mexico, viva Mexico, pero pienso que es too late. How do you say that? It's too late because all of the GMO seeds are out and have contaminated a lot of the loose stuff, and Mexico lives on corn. But viva Mexico, we love to see these reactions. Fukushima demonstrations are here. Up in the Bay Area, they're going to do a Fukushima is here aerial thing on the great. I mean, it's good, and it all needs to happen. But the front line of the battle is New Brunswick right now. Because what happened this week was the Sipitag and Mi'kmaq people, warriors, men and women warriors. God, the women were so brave. There's one shot of a woman kneeling holding an eagle feather. It's inspiring. And you have camo-clad Mounties, and no, they weren't Delta Force. I know what the Delta Force emblem looks like. Those were not Delta Force. U.S. Delta Force would not be in Canada. The Canadians have some sense of pride and dignity left. Drop that. What's worse is that a Houston company, no doubt connected to the Bush family, was dictating to the Canadian government through Stephen Harper, its minion, which now who is now the Prime Minister of Canada, that SNW Energy, a Houston-based firm, was going to go in and break all the treaties ever signed to explore for natural gas. And there have been a number of increasing presence demonstrations, blockades by indigenous peoples all over Turtle Island. That's North America, for those of you who don't understand. You know, as far as the natives go, there really are no boundaries. The state lines weren't there. Mother Earth didn't draw them any more than she drew deed lines for lots and properties to own. Crazy Horse said, how can you sell Mother Earth? How can you sell the water? How can you sell the land? And they stood up. They had had a blockade. Fracking equipment was quarantined, and it got ugly. The RCMP went in with heavy hand in a surprise blitzkrieg attack, and they were met with unbelievably courageous resistance that captured the attention of the world. And the morning that started, I'm proud to have played a role in that. I was getting direct communications from people there about live feeds. And direct feeds of information, and I was putting them up on Facebook as fast as I possibly could. And I get about 250,000 visitors a day to my Facebook page, and a lot of them are movers and shakers. That went viral, and a lot of support was. And I was part of a greater effort, but I was honored to be a part of that. I wish I could be there myself. This is getting so out of hand. I've never taken a human life, but I'm ready to fight. And let me just say to everybody out there, it is absolutely irrelevant whether Agent Provocateur or the indigenous peoples themselves burned six RCMP police cars. I don't care. It will be important in the legal defense of the warriors, the 40 Miqua warriors who were arrested. Yes, but that's not the point. The point was, and it remains, whether or not SNW Energy, the Bush family, the fascist Prime Minister Harper, and the corporations will be allowed to violate that land, because enough is enough. And I believe they know this. There's amazing leadership and elders for the Elsipitog and Miqua people, and the warriors are so brave. There's a defense fund, by the way, that you can contribute to on my Facebook page. I was blocked earlier. There was some kind of glitch. I'm going to try again. I'm going to give $50 of the money you guys gave me to them, because that's how a gift economy works. That's what sharing works. That's what keeping it fluid does. It provides the energy. And whether these amazing people know it or not, they are now standing up for and representing all who love life on this planet everywhere. Because if they give in, if some kind of deal is cut, we'll do a deal, as I said in Braveheart. You know, that's going to take so much wind out. There is inertia there now because the Mounties were defeated. They struck their colors at a local Mountie post. The injunction, the court order was not served. The equipment remains sequestered or whatever, quarantined, corralled. And there is no fracking occurring. And that is what must continue to happen, because the belly of infinite growth is exposed right now. They are weak. Their lies are so weak. And the momentum, the awareness that all 7 billion of us two-leggeds are one with our mother and with the life and the animals here, is growing. And that just has to be held. And I pray with all my heart for strength and love and for guidance for all who were there on the front line. I am so itching to be with you. You know, I've done a lot of things. I've been in many shootings, and I've never taken a human life. And it's not that I have this urge to go out and kill something, but my urge to fight is so strong right now. I am so tired, as I'm sure many of us are, and I just thank the leadership of the indigenous brothers and sisters. All these stories about Fukushima, time bomb, the clock is ticking. I'm scrolling through here, and the greatest situation since 2011 Fukushima accident right now. That's ENE News, which has been doing great work. So has Arne Gunderson, who continues to do all that work. And so now, last week, if you remember, I took you to the Roach Motel at the end of the universe, and I helped us all to spend a moment or two taking inventory of ourselves, looking at the dance we've all done, because that's the yuga, that's the plane, that's the life that we have lived in. And that was a pretty stark piece of tape. And then I took us to a beautiful Lakota prayer song performed by Robbie Robertson of the band, Ua. That's a peyote song, asking, you know, Father, I want to live. Father, I want to live. And carrying a message that the way to whatever is left for us and what remains for us to do or what we can do, I think it's becoming clear that we pretty much run out of time. But there's a way to miracles, was to ask for mercy, was to ask for pity, was to say, I want to live, forgive me, reconcile me. Well, here's a song that is just as perfect as Jackson Brown's Before the Deluge, or so many of these so prophetic songs. But this song fits so tightly tonight. And it's a song by Leonard Cohen. It's called Anthem. Let's listen to it, and listen to every word. Listen to every word.
The birds, they sing at the break of day. Start again, I heard them say. Don't dwell on what has passed away or what is yet to be. Yeah, the war, they will be fought again. The holy dove, she will be cut again. Bought and sold and bought again. The dove is never free. But still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. For signs, the signs were sent. The birth betrayed, the marriage spent. Yeah, the widowhood of every government. Signs for all to see. Can't run no more with that lawless crowd, while the killers in high places say their prayers out loud. But they've summoned up a thundercloud. They're gonna hear from me. But still to bring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Parts, you won't have the sun.
up the march. There is no drum. Every heart to love will come, but like a refugee. Ring the bell that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a gets in. That's how the light gets in. That's how the light gets in.
Songs of all time. You can find that on YouTube, Leonard Cohen. Oh my God. Well, if you know anything about music, what a giant and what a song. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And I have to share with you guys, I'm going to indulge in a little personal sharing here. Over the course of the last 2 weeks, I have felt more like fighting than I have ever felt in my whole life, and I see that around, and I'm a warrior who's never taken a life because I didn't need to. I did what I did without having to. But there's a time when one feels like fighting, when the blood comes up. I was talking to, communicating with a good friend of mine, Ira Jones, who lives up on Pine Ridge, and he was talking about the Tomahawks of Justice are coming out, and this is the time to wield them. We have nothing left to lose. And the heart gives the sign, and these urges are not, they should be listened to. That doesn't mean we go out and start committing mayhem. We're not murderers, but it's time to fight. If there ever was a time to fight, it's now. Typhoon Francisco will be in off the coast of Japan, heading for Tokyo and Fukushima by Thursday or so of next week. I don't think any of us really need to speculate. It's not a big jump to consider what will happen if, just from building 450, the equivalent radiation of 15,000 atom bombs falls down and has an open-air reaction, not to mention building 3, which will then be unapproachable. In other words, if that goes, the whole site goes. Now, not to mention what would happen if the buildings just collapsed and were all washed into the ocean, leaving the cores now uncooled, probably venting directly into the atmosphere from their China syndrome, 3 cores there. And what they're doing with fracking is out and out obvious murder now. The world is beginning to realize that, and yet they are accelerating. Even as they lose battles, they are doing everything they can to frack harder and faster, like the addict, the cocaine addict, getting one more line in before he blows his heart up, before he blows the planet up. The only solution is to end human industrial civilization. Oh, yeah, and fuck you, Tom Hartman. You did a nice feel-good piece this week, and you closed it with some salesman who tried to tell us that the fish off Fukushima in California was safe to eat. God, I hate wolves in sheep's clothing. I just can't stand them. So it's very intense, and I'm gonna stumble through this next week and try to assemble these pieces. But the message is getting much clearer. On many levels, we are beaten. The bells that we could have rung, we didn't ring when we had the time, when the warnings were there. But now, as we close in with some focus on what likely fates await us, and as we this Malibu story is going to get very big in California. God knows what the effect that's going to have on the West Coast. And I pray that the people in Australia are not burned and fried. And I pray that everybody who's struggling will find their way through it. We know that most will not, and that's how we accept ourselves. So we asked for signs. The signs were sent, signs for all to see. And I can't run no more with that lawless crowd, but they've summoned up a thundercloud. They're going to hear from me. Every heart will come to love, but like a refugee. Bring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. I love you guys. Let us walk this walk one foot at a time. Let's walk it together. Let us walk in knowing that those of us who have this vibration are all family with Mother Earth. I'll see you next week. Good night.